Jeff Reed. I am the director of the Flat River Community Library.
My name is Amanda Lee, and I'm the director of the Montgomery Reading Council.
My name is Brian Bloomstrom, and I'm currently the director of public safety for the City of Greenville Public Safety Department, as well as the Montcalm Township Supervisor.
Welcome to the Flat River Front Porch. Hello and Happy New Year. Welcome to the fourth episode of Flat River Front Porch. I am Steph Reed. I am the director of the Flat River Community Library. I am cheating a little bit for the week after Christmas, since it's not quite New Year yet, but Christmas is over. So that Christmas joy is just sort of seeping out of us like a balloon. It's like losing its air. But then we still have New Year's over the horizon, and we can kid ourselves into thinking that we might actually like make some life changes related to New Year's. There's two ways in which I'm cheating. One, I'm bringing in somebody who is staff extra, basically. This person doesn't actually work for the library, because while you work in this building, you don't work for me, which sounds way more intense than I wanted to. But you are not actually a library staff member, although your office is in our building. So you get to be one with us, but just kind of float above the fray, too.
I enjoy the popcorn.
Right. Yeah. And then the other way, of course, is that this person is one of my best buds. So I can get a chance to chit-chat with
That's
Claire,
a lot of pressure putting on me.
Oh my, you know what? You build the pressure on yourself. Okay. So before we go any further, why don't we actually say who it is? Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Amanda Lee, and I'm the director of the Montgomery Reading Council.
Among so many other things, yes.
Just one of the many hats I wear.
Yes. I told Amanda that we were going to have a normal human conversation. And
I said, when had we ever?
Yes, we don't have normal conversations. We just have really weird, random conversations. I'd like to think that is not my fault. I like to think that it's something that it's just an energy you bring to our friendship. So frequently, it's some random tidbit from pop culture. Something, did you know that these two people got divorced? Or did you, like, have you paid attention to this extremely weird reality TV show that I'm obsessed with?
It's always something.
What are you currently obsessed with?
Oh, my goodness gracious. I am in such a black hole with Sister Wives. It is just a disaster. I'm watching it like a...
Why is it a disaster?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Mary, Janelle, and Christine have left Cody. So now he's only stuck with Robin, who many people think was the reason that all started, like, the split of the family. I started rewatching it from the very beginning, and it's just been a disaster in my life because... it's just too much time I'm involving myself in this. It's too much of a commitment. I consider myself to be the fifth sister wife. It's just a lot, and I feel...
Just a heads up. She is actually married to a real person that she has met in real life.
Yes.
So, not I'm one not, of the sister
I'm
wives.
Not a sister wife. I don't understand how anyone can watch this show and think it's a good idea, but to each their own... But I personally would not want to be a sister wife and married to Cody Brown, because I just feel like it's just a bad situation. Now, would I want to like live in their house for a week and be a fly on the wall? Yes, I would like that, but that's not going to happen.
That's essentially what you're doing.
That's a good point.
That's cult watching a reality TV show.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's good. I watch Sister Wives. I've just started watching Modern Family, which is not a reality show, and
no.
I'm liking that. This weekend.
Like, had you not watched it at all before this?
I had not watched it.
How is that possible?
I'm too deep into reality shows. Too deep. And then,
but no. We need to take a moment to address that statement. I am too deep into reality to watch Modern Family.
I know. It's a bad situation. And it's such a good show.
Modern Family?
Yeah.
It deteriorates with time.
Does it?
Yes, unfortunately. The first... I'm sure people will disagree with me on this.
I'm enjoying it now. It's delightful. This weekend, my husband and I watched Die Hard, of course, for Christmas. Okay. And I made him watch Beverly Hills Cop, which is delightful and I think holds the test of time.
Fair
I don't
enough.
Care what anyone says. It's delightful.
Are they companions because of the time frame? or like, because Die Hard is like, quote unquote, a Christmas yes. movie. But Beverly Hills Cop, not so much.
But I feel that it has that nostalgic feeling that Christmas has.
Okay.
Where it makes you kind of feel like that warm heart. And also, it's just a good movie. Eddie Murphy's very charming. Ryan and I were comparing Bruce Willis and Eddie Murphy, like how they were different and like about how they always did the right thing, but the right thing ethically, but maybe not right thing morally. How do you want to put this? Sometimes they did things that were legal and probably not the best, but they kind of always did things right.
They just didn't do things by the book.
They didn't do things by the book, you know, and they always had the greater good at heart. So it's kind of like letting an old lady off who double parked at her husband's funeral. That never happened, but that's an example when they would like. That's an example of, like what those guys, because they're both cops, right?
Right.
They would both just kind of turn a blind eye and like do the right thing.
Because both of those came out late 80s, early 90s. I wonder if there were maybe some political undertones at the time, especially with the Beverly Hills Cop thing, because, I mean, 92 would have been the Rodney King riots.
See, I was thinking, I was right. Beverly Hills Cop was 84.
Oh, okay.
Because I was thinking it came out the same time as Thriller with Michael Jackson, right? Was that 84 too?
Sounds right.
So, like, a lot of cool things happened in 84.
Okay.
But then I was looking.
When did Ghostbusters come
out? Ooh, that's a good question.
I feel like it was 84 or 85.
Ghostbusters, let me look it up.
And then Back to the Future was definitely 85.
I can talk a lot about Ghostbusters, too. Like, yeah. not two, like, as in, like, 84 as well. Oh, my goodness gracious. You want to, I forgot the best bit trivia.
You forgot it.
I forgot. So, Eddie Murphy was going to be in Ghostbusters.
Was he?
Yeah, but then he just chose to do Beverly Hills Cop.
Was he going to be the Ernie Hudson
character? Ernie Hudson character.
I don't feel like that would have worked.
I know, right?
Eddie Murphy is a big personality.
I know, right?
And Ernie Hudson has a very subtle, like, I don't know about this vibe to him, which is why he worked. Like, because he stepped into that role and he was, and like, his character was kind of like, I'm just looking for a job. And you people are up to some weird bit. You and I could probably talk about 80s and 90s stuff more than the majority of people would be interested in it. We probably have some millennial listeners, I would imagine.
I'm a Gen X. What are you?
I'm what do they call us?
Are you Zennial?
There's something about the idea of pronouncing the letter X and Z that makes me uncomfortable.
But it's Xenu, like with Scientology.
That's your argument?
That's my argument. That's what I got for you.
Yes, I'm right on the border. I've got the jadedness of a Gen Xer. Mm-hmm. And that sort of like these kids today with their technology a little bit with that on that side of things. But at the same time, I'm just like, ooh, with AI, I can make silly pictures. I hit both sides of the spectrum, I feel like.
I think I'm just Gen X.
Do you? My image of Gen Xers is very like,
don't be fooled by their appearance. I'm wearing all black in my head.
Oh, okay. Just for clarification, you look like you're going to get a pumpkin spice latte right now. Like you look like you haven't quite let go of fall.
I'm not letting go of fall.
And that's fine. But like, let's acknowledge the fact that you are not Eddie Vedder right now.
Oh, yeah.
You don't even listen to that kind of, you don't listen to like.
I used to.
Okay. You were a grunge person?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was an alternative girl.
Okay.
Remember that term?
So I was looking at pictures yesterday for some reason of the royal family going to church Christmas Day.
I got a lot to think about that.
I don't know nearly as much about the royal family as you do.
It's one of my things.
Yeah. That's why I brought it up. there were so many people in those pictures I did not recognize. Yes. Wow. My brain is saying, the younger brother, I know his name.
Louis.
See, you're talking about the next generation. I'm not even talking about them.
Oh, you know what? Harry and Meghan?
Harry and Meghan. There we go. Harry and Meghan were obviously
not present. No, they're in Costa Rica, allegedly.
Because they're persona non grata at this point. I forgot how many kids.
Three. Wait, that Harry and Meghan have? Or that?
No, that Will and Kate have.
They have three. They have George, Charlotte, and Louis.
Yes.
And Louis is a darling because he's always acting up at events. But what I want to talk...
They're children.
They're children.
I mean...
And, like, I would be worse at this age.
I think our bar for, like, human behavior is a little bit different for royals because the idea of these kids just growing up in the spotlight.
Yeah.
And, like, so them acting like children, we're like, oh, look.
Yeah, we're like, oh,
human.
Yeah, they're, like, they're so cute.
Yeah.
I would like to dive in to the issue of Sarah Ferguson being there.
This was an issue.
This is an issue. Because
Doesn't she live in the same house with him?
Yes, she lives in the same house with
Andrew. I didn't know that.
She hasn't been there in 30 years. The last time she was there, she was walking with Diana. But what is interesting, though, is also her ex-husband, who she lives with, Andrew, was there. Why do they keep having Andrew walk to the church?
Charles, like, publicly forgave him
or something?
Yes,
so why is he walking with him to the church?
Well, isn't that why? Because he publicly forgave him?
No. Oh, I thought you meant... I didn't think it was a public forgiveness.
I thought I saw something.
I thought it was like a slap on the wrist. That's how I took it.
Well, I feel like maybe with the royal family, that like the two kind of go together.
Okay. I think that
it's a crossfade. It's like it's like I'm gonna say you did a bad thing, and now that we've acknowledged that, we can move on.
Yeah, it's just a mess, and I really feel like they because like everyone's talking about how Sarah Ferguson was there, but nobody's talking about how Prince, you know, Andrew was there once again. I feel like it's a distraction.
Who is your favorite royal?
That's very difficult.
I watched the first two seasons of
The Crown. I watched them all.
I started struggling with season three because I love Olivia Colman, but she's really weird as the queen. And the guy who plays Prince Philip in that season is also like the bad guy from Outlander. And so he makes me feel traumatized. So I had trouble with that. But I love Claire Foy, and I love Matt Smith. And where was I going? Oh, this was leading me to my favorite royal.
His favorite royal.
Who is Princess Margaret?
I like her too, but she's not my favorite.
She was...
Because
She's gone.
She's not gone. Around.
Yeah. And she was batty. And
she was batty, and she wasn't the best friend she could be. So for that reason...
She was super self-involved.
Super self-involved. Yeah. She took 3 hours, well, quite a few hours to get ready in the morning. You know.
I mean, where did she have to go?
My favorite is Diana, though.
Okay.
I just like what,
I think she's kind of everybody's favorite.
Yeah, that's why I hate to even say it. It just sounds, I could say like, oh, my favorite is, you know, some random.
Someone really.
Yeah.
Really controversial.
I like Princess Michael Kent, but.
I don't even know who that is, but okay.
It's like a random one. No, but I really like her a lot. I mean, I do like Princess Catherine, too. I hate to say it. She's gotten to me.
Who is she again?
She's William's wife.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm still used to thinking of her as Kate.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was trying to be respectful.
I'm actually reading a book right now that I'm not going to be able to come up with a title of. It's... a British comedian from Peep Show and from a bunch of other British sitcoms. Okay, so the author is David Mitchell, and it's called Unruly, The Ridiculous History of England's Kings and Queens.
It is ridiculous.
And it goes from Anglo-Saxon times up through... It actually stops at the Tudors. Mm-hmm. So Elizabeth I is the last one. But like it he talks about like the fact that like how are we still doing this?
I don't know why we are either. Money?
Let's talk about a little bit about the holiday. Yay. What did you do for Christmas?
Well, my son was sick. So.
Mine was too. Yay. Yay for getting sick over the holidays. Everybody is sick.
Everyone's sick. I'm not sick, knock on wood. So, but the day before he was sick, we went to this restaurant in Grand Rapids we like. Mm-hmm. It's a Indian restaurant. It's Indian Sri Lanka restaurant. And I will spell it for you if I can even find it. It's very good, and it's a hidden gem.
Okay.
We didn't do stockings. We each got one present. And then that was about it. And we decorated the tree prior to that. So it wasn't like some people like decorate on Christmas Eve, which I think is crazy.
That is a lot of work for right before.
Yeah. Okay. The restaurant I like to go to is spelled MITHU, Sri Lankan Indian Cuisine.
M-I-T-H-U.
It's unassuming eatery with a weekend buffet.
I feel like we should figure out. But actually pronounce
I know, that. I feel bad too.
Two?
Yeah.
I'm trying to make it French for some reason.
It's very good. Well, a lot of vegetarian options, so that's good.
Yay.
It's very good. It's bopping. And okay. Then we went, afterwards, we went to the Middle Eastern market by there.
What day was this?
This was the day before. So Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve, okay.
And then afterwards, we went to a couple doors down to the Middle Eastern supermarket and got like fresh pita bread and tabbouleh and like, is it called a pantone or pantoni?
Pantoni.
Yeah, I got one of those. And then they got
that's Italian, that one. I got
that. And we got like fun snacks. That's what we did.
Food is food. You know what? Everybody thinks that Christmas is about a tree,
yeah,
or decorations or presents or family. It's about food. Let's acknowledge that.
I like food a lot.
So when my family started getting gastrointestinal symptoms, it was a real downer, because like not being able to truly appreciate. I was going to make Oreo bombs, and I didn't because I didn't want to accidentally infect anybody. Did you get anything cool for Christmas?
I got a lot of cool things. My husband adopted a Highland cow for me.
Is it in your yard?
It's in my bathtub. No, it's like a share, and I got some cool like
cow. That sounds inhumane. Cows can't walk around enough in your bathtub. There's no grazing or anything.
I know. And I got some cool like bath salts, and I got some cool plates that are like decorative. They have like birds on them because I like birds. And then I got like really like quirky fun stuff. Like
that sums it up nicely. Quirky and fun. That's our Amanda. I had a chance last week to have a conversation with somebody who has their hands in a lot of really interesting things in our area and who has a lot of responsibility. And it kind of has to be on all the time. So getting him to try to turn off a little bit was tricky. So, but I was really excited to have him come in and to have him have a chance to talk to me. And that is Brian Bloomstrom, who is both the head of Greenville Public Safety and the Montcalm Township Supervisor. I'm really excited that I actually managed to get our guest this week into a room sitting down, because I can imagine that doesn't happen a whole lot. I've only had the privilege to meet this person once in a Rotary meeting situation. And he was definitely on at that point. Had to have the switch on and, you know, be Mr. Professional, which is understandable. But I am going to let him introduce himself. So if you could tell us who you are, where we can find you on a regular day, and what you're up to.
Oh, well, thank you, Steph. My name is Brian Bloomstrom, and I'm currently the Director of Public Safety for the City of Greenville Public Safety Department, as well as the Montcalm Township Supervisor. Any given day, you can either find me at work, normally here in the city, 8 to 4, any given time, plus extra meetings, or find me at home, I live up in Montcalm Township, and doing things for the township up there, mm-hmm. Preparing for board meetings and trying to do the supervisor role the best I can. Mm-hmm. Been married over 15 years to my wife, Olivia. We have two boys, Brendan and Braxton, and they are 12 and 10. And so they keep us very busy as well.
You know? I was going to say, you sound pretty busy to begin with. I mean, right. You must have trouble just even finding time to get downtime with the family with as much on your plate.
Well, we always talk about the role of, you know, police, fire, emergency management, about time management. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole key all the way through between the work and doing the extracurricular activities and family. It's just good time management so that everything is taken care of on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm.
Are your sons involved in a lot of extracurriculars then?
Yes. Our youngest is big into football. So he just finished up his second season playing Greenville Rocket football. So that takes a lot of our fall.
Oh, that's awesome.
And my oldest is really big into hunting and fishing. So
okay.
Right now.
This is his time of year. Yep.
This is his time of year right now. And he's been lucky enough to shoot a couple does.
Oh, that's exciting.
He's been happy with that. Shot his first buck this year also.
Okay.
And he's happy. And then after we get past the January 1st, it'll be moving into, well, fishing.
Okay. Yep. So you all go ice fishing then?
He has his own boat. He actually bought his own boat a year ago, and he saved up money for it. And
that's spectacular.
That's his pride and joy. So.
So where does he fish?
We try and hit a few of the lakes. The one we like the most is Pearl Lake.
Okay.
Just because how close it is and going mm-hmm. over to Sheridan. But anything inland like that, he's just a small rowboat, but the two boys and I go out and enjoy an afternoon and see what we can catch.
All right. So it's really nice that it's something that you all can do together too. It's always nice finding stuff you can actually relate to with your kids too. How long have you been in the Greenville area? Are you a lifelong Greenville resident?
No, actually, I moved here to take a job as a public safety officer back in 1998. There was a job opening. I was already a firefighter in the Saginaw area. Mm-hmm. Went through police academy and saw that this department was a cross-trained department.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah.
And so therefore, I had both certifications, so applied. Took the job that was offered to me in 98, and then just this past July was offered the job to be the director. Mm-hmm. So 25 years of moving up through the ranks and working a lot of midnight shifts and then the day shift and supervisory roles and different things. And now I get to work with all the men and women down there. Mm-hmm. Great group of people and enjoy it every day.
So you've only been here 25 years. That's all.
That's it. That's all.
So you're practically native at this point, I would say. It's been long enough that maybe it's not as clear in your memory at this point, but what was your experience coming to Greenville in terms of what life was like here compared to what things were like, you know, on the Saginaw side where you came from?
So when I first moved over here in the late 90s, it was definitely a difference when you cross over 127 between mm-hmm. a little more liberal and a little more conservative. Right. And I noticed that it was a little more conservative over here on this side. I grew up in Saginaw Township, so urbanized neighborhoods and things like that. We're here rolling farm fields and lots of areas of agriculture. And I really liked that change. You know, I don't mind the urban thing. I like going to Detroit, mm-hmm. watch sport games and everything else there. But, you know, to live in more of a rural setting, more peaceful, get your chance to decompress after long days. So it was a really good move, I felt, on my part to come over here. I've enjoyed it ever since.
Oh, that's great. So you mentioned that obviously the Department of Public Safety is integrated in a way that not all municipalities have them put together. Could you talk a little bit about how that works, how they function, you know, collaboratively?
Sure. So the full-time employees that work every shift have to be cross-trained as police and firefighters, and we do provide limited medical services as well. And we have 18 positions. Currently we have 15 that are filled. So we do have some openings that we're trying to fill as well. Mm-hmm. As we continue to grow, just in the last year, we were budgeted for two more spots because the city's growing at a very rapid pace. And if we look and you can see the different neighborhoods that are springing up on the west end and then over in the, on the south side to southeast side. So we have some positions that are open there. But anybody that's working on the road, full-time has to cover those occupations. And then we are also joined by about 15 part-paid firefighters. So local community members that are on our department have gone through fire academy and respond to fire calls when we need assistance. And to me, they're the bread and butter department from the aspect that when you need help on a large crash or fire call that, you know, we can activate the pagers and have them come in. And depending on the time of day, show up and assist us. And we work hand in hand with them to solve those issues that come up.
Do you think that that part of the reason this Greenville is organized like that is because of the way that the community is structured, because it is more rural? Or is there a particular reason, do you think, that it's this is the direction that Greenville goes?
I would like to say that it's also basically because of the size of the community, mm-hmm. And then also the community support that's there for all city resources, not just our department, but right. all the city resources that are provided. You know, in order to have a successful part paid group of people, you have to have community individuals that want to be firefighters. So
we're
very fortunate in this case that we have those people that will come to the department, apply, and go through fire academy and do very well. So larger cities than that, you don't see people that have time because their time is spent driving to work somewhere else, sometimes an hour away. They come back home and that's their day. Mm-hmm.
So are these individuals, they work in other capacities as well, and this is something they do in addition to that?
That's correct.
Okay.
And some of their jobs, if they're here in town, they'll let them leave their jobs if a major fire call comes in. You know, there are some that are like, I work the day, I'm not available till after 5 o'clock. So we know who's available normally when. Nighttime, there's more available than during the day. normally, but we always know that when we put that page out for callback, that those will be showing up. As even to a shout out to the rest of the Montcalm County Fire Service, we have what we call mutual aid agreements. And at any given time, we can request another department come and assist us, just like we will go and assist them.
I wonder if that's not something that that the average person is not necessarily aware of in terms of how those organizations work together. They don't necessarily see that aspect of it, but there is so much cooperation and collaboration between departments and between municipalities. It's nice to see. So what drew you to public safety in the first place? What to your profession?
You know, just living where I did over in Saginaw, interacting with the police officers and firefighters over there really drew me into wanting to join that profession. And so that's been something I wanted to do since I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. And then going through college and going to study it, both law enforcement and fire science, but then being able to be on our local fire department to get some of that experience really helped. So many times in public safety, people get hired and they're sent to the fire academy, where I came in with 3 years already on the job doing that occupation. So that helped where I could, didn't have to worry about going to the fire academy, was already set and ready to go and was off and running.
I'm really curious, what does one do in fire academy?
Fire academy is spent learning how to tie ropes and knots and practice ventilation, understand the aspects of fire, the science that behind it. Understanding building construction and all the different things that a firefighter needs to know to keep themselves safe and mitigate emergencies that are out there.
Okay, that makes sense. So you're not like going around setting fires and then putting them out?
No.
So obviously you also have more recently, in this year, right, taken on the Montcalm Township supervisor role as well.
Last year.
So were you aware of the fact that you were going to also at some point become the head of the public safety as well? Like, were they close enough together that you were like, okay, well, I think I can handle all of this together?
No, the supervisor job actually came first.
And then
I started doing that. And then the opportunity to be the director came after that time. But it was something where I wasn't expecting to be the supervisor of anything. It wasn't an elected position.
Right.
End up just turning in his resignation, and somebody had to step up and run the township. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I wouldn't mind giving that a shot. I have a background in public administration anyway.
Right.
So I thought, well, you know, and so I've always felt my role there at the present time has been set the ship straight, mm-hmm. get things straightened around, have an even keel, and then get it prepared that if I do decide to run next year, could do that. Or if I hand it off to somebody else, everything's in good hands to move forward.
To what extent, when you stepped into it, did you feel like you had a good handle as to what you were going to encounter when you got into the role?
Oh, I'll to say this about both jobs. You don't know what you're going to encounter on any given day-to-day basis. So, you know, every once in a while, something will pop up of, oh, we got to look at this. We had changed processes here. We have to look at fine-tuning something. So, whether it's the supervisor job or the director job.
That makes sense. Are there significant differences between the two positions that you could point to say, okay, well, this one works totally different than how I do things when I'm at public safety or whatever?
You know, I wouldn't say differences. The biggest thing I would say is how you treat people.
That makes sense.
Whether it's those of us working together in the department, we all work as a fine-tuned team to solve issues and provide good services for the city, mm-hmm. just like, you know, communicating well and treating people with respect in their constituents of a Montcalm Township. Mm-hmm. It's how to treat people and being able to understand their concerns and trying to solve their issues to make sure with the services.
That's a great point. I think that I guess I had not specifically thought of it in terms of that intersection, but not everybody has the skills to be able to patiently and calmly and open-mindedly listen to people's concerns and try to integrate them into how you handle your job. And I can imagine a lot of your patience came from from working in public safety as well. So as you mentioned, you've been here in this area for about 25 years. What would you say is unique about the Greenville or Montcalm Township area?
Looking at Greenville, the community spirit, the community togetherness, collaboration with everybody, different walks of life. I think it's just amazing to watch how the town grows, but how the town as well, the different people that are doing things to make town successful. And it's just great to see in a small city how successful they can be. I remember when Electrolux was here and then the whole deal where they chose to leave. And that was a hard time for many individuals. You look at the workforce and concern among community people as to where am I going to, you know, how am I going to pay for my house, get my house paid, truck paid. But through all working together and collaboration, whether it's the community and city government, city manager Bisonic, looking for different avenues. I mean, if you look now, we're close to 20 years since that happened, and town is vibrant again. Businesses moving in here, people moving in, new neighborhoods, you know, springing. The success in the last two decades has been great, and the resilience has been should be noticed by everybody how the town has come back.
Absolutely, and I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago where we were talking about sort of the future of our profession specifically, and one of the things we were discussing was the way in which Michigan as a whole is changing and shifting, and where we were in the spectrum of population and business, say 50 years ago, than where we are now. And what's interesting to me is that for the state of Michigan overall, the population is actually decreasing, and we're seeing more people leave the state, and we're seeing an older generation is aging out. And what's great to me is that I don't think that locally that's being reflected. I think we are in an area that is growing and that is thriving. And it makes me wonder, like, what is so great and unique about this area that's driving that force? Do you have any thoughts on?
I think looking at what the ability of the county and the different communities itself, and what the offerings are there, how it interacts with those and what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. You know, those that have been in the cities for a long time that don't want to deal with that. They want a little more rural pace, slow down, maybe close to retirement age. That's a great offering for whether you are outside the city of Greenville or Montcalm County itself. Recreation enthusiasts with all the state land and the waterways that are here. That's the ability. If you're looking for, I like urban life, but I don't want hustle and bustle of Detroit, Pontiac, Oakland, Wayne County, You have the things here in Greenville where now you have a city type environment, you know, small time city that does have the necessary industrial and commercial things that people need. So all those different offerings is really, I think, what helps draw people to this area and increase then the population, not just in the city, but the county overall.
And you know, it's easy to get biased on stuff like this, but I have found that there is a really generally positive spirit with the community as well. We have a lot of really active community members who are doing good things in the area, who are wanting to promote that growth, making sure that if we have people in our community who are struggling, then we're helping them get on their feet. You don't necessarily see that in all communities either. We sort of talked about this a little bit, but do you actually have any spare time?
Oh, it's like I said, back to the time management. Yes, I do have some spare time. I enjoy, I do teach part-time at Montcalm Community College.
Oh my gosh.
So I teach one or two classes there a semester on Monday nights in the criminal justice department. But you know, I enjoy being in the class.
You're not teaching like watercolors or something totally unrelated.
No, nothing like that. And, I also, will travel on the road in the winter times and teach fire-related classes. Different fire departments in different counties, things involving fire investigation and different specialized topics. And I enjoy doing that in my free time because it allows me to travel a little bit, meet some other people in the profession, and then bring ideas back here to our entire department of things that work well in other places in the state. So besides my own time of hunting and fishing and helping my wife hang out with the horses, she has six horses.
Okay.
She's out taking care of them every day, and so enjoy spending time with her, and we try and make sure we have 3-4 times a summer where we take off in the camper with the horses and she rides. I handle the food aspect and make sure that's ready to go over the campfire when she comes back, and be able to enjoy nature that way too.
That's fantastic. Do you all keep them primarily just, you know, for the joy of having horses? Do you any, do you do anything competitive with them? Or?
Oh, my wife used to, and she's getting back into that again.
So, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. She's been around horses her whole life. So.
Right. I know some horse enthusiasts, and I feel like it's a lifelong thing. Like once you're immersed in it, you're in it.
Exactly.
What would you say in your roles that you see that the average community member doesn't? What do you think is unique about your perspective in the community?
What I think is unique is that there are so many people out there that care about others and care about the community and do what they can do to see the success of both, but don't want any credit for it and really do it behind the scenes, mm-hmm. which is very unique. And every once in a while, you'll get the Daily News, and shout out to Corey Smith. He does a great job over there. He covers the
Greenville area. Yep, this is our last interview. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I mean, and he's able to find those stories where people get recognized for what they do behind the scenes. But when you work in law enforcement and you're out every day, you see people at their best, you see people at their worst, but you also deal with those that can help others solve problems. Mm-hmm. And there are many people around here, which is it's unique that. They just go about their daily business and they still help people in any way they can. They volunteer on different boards and organizations. Mm-hmm. They could be coaches. They could be a member of the COG, Coalition of Greater Greenville. Mm-hmm. And they may be on one or two city boards that are out there, planning commissions, et cetera. But there's a lot of buy-in from community members around here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very unique to this area because it's not where we're always looking for volunteers, but a lot of times, those positions get filled by those that have a passion to want to see the community become vibrant.
What challenges are you running into? What would you like to see improved or addressed in what you have to deal with?
Well, right now, law enforcement and fire services as a general state, there are two occupations here where we need people. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of retirements that are going on around the state. We're not the only group that in Macomb County that needs people for law enforcement and fire. It's all over. You can go online and see that there's jobs for both all over the state. And we could use a few more officers here, and I know the sheriff's department could. Lakeview could use one. Talk to the state police. They're running their academies. They could use more people. So mm-hmm. When I started, it was very difficult to get a job in law enforcement. A lot of those positions were full. Well, now we're at a point 25 years later, a lot of those people are retiring.
Okay.
And the void is there to try and get people to do those jobs. So that's one thing where hopefully in the future that pendulum kind of comes back and we get more people invested in both law enforcement and fire services in general and can get the public service jobs mm-hmm. filled again.
So for anyone who might be considering approaching something like that or getting into that line of work, what are you looking for? What are the expectations for somebody in that position?
Well, for law enforcement to go to academy unless a department hires you or puts you through it, an associate degree. And then there are local academies. When I say local, we know within an hour, there's one in Lansing, mm-hmm. GRCC, Grand Valley. Ferris has one to go to academies, and then you can apply for a job. And many people will do that because then they kind of pick where they want to go. Mm-hmm. From the fire side of things, I've always recommended to people join your local volunteer fire department. Mm-hmm. They'll pay for you to go through the local fire academy, and that allows you to see if you like that or not. And if you do, then you have the opportunity to maybe to apply to a larger municipality to get a full-time job doing that type of work. Mm-hmm. But others are very happy of, I just want to do it to serve my community. My neighbor's house, a fire or something happens, I'm going to be able to help, trying to recruit them to do that because local fire departments are always in need of volunteers. Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that there are aspects to that role that aren't necessarily what people think of either. I mean, there's the obvious aspect of managing fire-related issues, but can you speak a little bit as to what else the fire department side of things are involved in?
And depending where you work, Macomb County is unique where we have our own county ambulance service. Mm-hmm. So the fire department does not run rescue services per se. Mm-hmm. But other counties, municipalities, that's what the fire department does is they run on all the fire calls, vehicle accidents, extrications, water rescues, hazmat, And then they also are tasked with medical services too. Mm-hmm. Well, we're here. We can focus primarily on fire-related issues, extrication, technical aspects of the job. And county EMS will take care of the medical component.
Okay. And that's good to know. One thing that I learned when I went through the process with Leadership Montcalm is, and this is going to sound really silly, but literally where to call when something comes up, because I'm not sure everybody knows necessarily if you have an issue that needs to be addressed and you know in some respect you're going to need assistance from public safety, knowing where to start if it's not an emergency. So could you even just clarify that for?
Well, I mean, emergencies are 911, but if you need to contact a specific department for a reason, you can contact Central Dispatch, 989-831-5253. That's the non-emergency line, and they can put you in touch if you need to contact a local fire chief about something. Or you have a complaint that you want to file that needs law enforcement intervention, but it's not an emergency. And those types of things can funnel through Central Dispatch, mm-hmm. and they can put you in the right direction.
I had the privilege of getting to see the Central Dispatch people in action during the Leadership Montcalm process, and they're impressive. Like, they know what they're doing.
Amy, Alyssa, and their team do a very good, highly motivated, highly trained, and we even will, as, say, public safety in general, will have officers and even those in the criminal justice, going through criminal justice education in that field, will sit in Central Dispatch to get an idea of what's it like on their side. Mm-hmm. You know, what's it like when the phone rings, the first people to answer that 911 call. How is that information taken? How is that relayed out? Because that they're the first first quote first responders, mm-hmm. unquote, to any incident.
Right, and one of the things that I found to be really interesting, just getting to see that too, was the very first call that was taken when I was there was actually someone who was just stranded on the side of the road and needed help getting their car towed, which is not what you would typically think of for calling for something like that, but they were able to connect them with the right person, which is great. So you didn't grow up in Greenville, which I'll give you a pass for that one. I didn't either, to be fair. But do you have any early memories of when you first moved to the area and like sort of your first impressions of it?
You know, when I first moved here, the new Meyer wasn't built. The last main building on that side of the road was Jorgensen Supermarket, and the rest was all field.
That's hard to picture.
Glen Carey was pretty new at that point, the golf course. A lot of the things outskirts of town were not there or were brand new. So that's my first memories of Greenville. And then looking now about how it's expanded over 2.5 decades is just amazing.
And that really puts into perspective what a shift it must have been for you when you moved here too, because that's a pretty dramatic difference if you're talking in the Saginaw area.
Oh. Yeah. Again, back to that rural based idea here where, you know, living out, I'm used to having my road be plowed in the morning before I had to go to school or whatever. You know, depending on how much snow you get, you have to get to the main road,
right?
To get out. And even over time, you know, the Montcalm Road Commission, County Road Commission, excellent job based on what we have out here for the different types of weather that we get. Mm-hmm. A lot of times the storms will stop about 1:31, but if they push past that group of individuals, man, they'll work all night long just to make sure we can get through as first responders and as the public the next morning. So that's great.
Yeah, and they participate or they give presentations in the Leadership Montcalm process as well. And for anybody who has not had the opportunity to participate in that, it's if you want to get to know the county, Leadership Montcalm is a fantastic resource for that. But it definitely gave me that much more respect for how hard that job is, how much they have on their plate.
Oh, absolutely. Mark Christensen, yeah, he is great to work with on the emergency side of things. He sits on our emergency management board for the county, so he's always in the know on that. And then from a township supervisor spot, you know, working with him to improve the roads during the summertime, you know, what roads need to be fixed, what should we upgrade? He's always in the know of what needs to be done. So a very valuable resource to the organization. Of course, he's close to retirement too, so I'm sure he's busy passing off his wide range of knowledge.
That's always stressful. You never know what all is stuck in your brain after that long until you actually have to sit down and write it down.
That's right.
Or pass it on to somebody else. the name of the podcast is Flat River Front Porch. And the concept behind that was that that when we think of what a front porch is and what it kind of evokes, we all might have memories of sitting on front porches on our own, or maybe not having a front porch when we were young. But it, I think we all sort of picture some place where a family or neighbors can sit down and sort of have just comfortable, casual conversations. So it, I feel like it evokes a nice sense of sort of communal space, but in a much more homey way. So I've been asking people if they do have memories of front porches from their youths or whatever. Do you have a front porch?
So I do. And probably the largest front porch that I've had is the house I live in now. Mm-hmm. So we've been there about 11 years or so. And our house is up on a hill and it kind of overlooks the road. And I do. I've spent time to just sitting out there, kind of looking over the front yard. You look one way and you see the woods and the creek, and you look the other way and you see the horses. It's just, it does. I'd recommend anybody, take a minute out of your day, take 5 minutes, take 10 minutes, in the summer, just sit on the porch, mm-hmm. and breathe in the air and enjoy what we have here in my company. Mm-hmm. Because we should all feel very blessed for what we have here between the natural resources, the people, the community, all those different things.
Absolutely. I imagine you must be a little bit out there in terms of how far your neighbors are from you, given the fact that you have horses and whatnot. I imagine you have a little bit of land associated with it. So is your closest neighbor within shouting distance?
On one way, we could.
Okay.
One direction, absolutely. But the rest of the way is farm fields, woods. Okay. There's a creek runs through there. And so it gives a lot of air for the boys to play.
Oh, that's perfect. I'm so jealous. That's in the goals for the lifetime. My kids are 2 and 7, and having an actual proper yard that isn't boxed in is our, someday we're going to have that. But we haven't talked a whole lot about the concept of the front porch is not necessarily communal, but sort of just that restful and just absorbing the world around you thing. But I really like that take on it. Do you have a favorite place to go out to eat in the area?
So for breakfast, Margo's is very, very good place
to go.
That's
a safe bet. Yeah.
That's always a safe bet. Turk Lake has great breakfast as well. And Crossroads Cafe. So okay. Kind of that triangle type of idea. If one's too full, you move on to the next.
Right.
And try and get in. Otherwise, El Jalapeno.
Northern town. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I really enjoy going there. Great food. And all their entrees are excellent. So.
Yeah. And they're not small either. There's plenty to eat, which is great.
Yes.
For a second there, I thought you were going to go all breakfast. And I'm like, you're turning yourself into a cop stereotype here just a little bit. Just all breakfast. Absolutely. Not that there's anything wrong with loving breakfast food, because breakfast food is the best.
I like to cook on my own, so I don't go out much for dinner. That's why, can't sit here and turn name off these good steak places. Cause I'd rather just, fire up my own grill behind the house or do a flat top with some stir fry and spend some of my free time there working on the grill a little bit. So that's fun too.
Is that your cooking specialty? Is your grill work? Do you have something you're known for?
Well, the family seems like the stir fry quite a bit.
Okay.
So, and then just depending on the flavor, if it's going to be chicken or beef, how we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. So that's my go-to in the summertime, especially. Mm-hmm. It's pretty easy. Cut the vegetables up, throw it on there. Works out well.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with just throwing a bunch of vegetables and meat in a pan and just making it happen.
Exactly. As long as you have the right spices. And the best thing is, if you really get crazy and forget what you put in it, and everybody's like, this is the best stuff ever, you got to make it again. And I got to think.
Oh, yeah.
Remember how much of everything I put in there.
Right.
So.
You're not a measuring cook.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not either. I totally get that. I'm like, let's just keep throwing these in until something works kind of thing. Yeah.
Yep.
How long have you been cooking? Like, when did you learn to cook?
It was really after college, after I came here. So, and I have a flat top out back and a regular grill. So okay. That way I can mix up a little bit. Sometimes it's nice to grill a steak or a chicken or something like that. And then other times, that way you can change those things up.
I'm very comfortable in the kitchen. I haven't quite made it outside yet. I feel like there's a little bit of an art to grilling just right in order to make sure that it's cooked in just the way that you want it to. And it's not easy. It's just a gas grill.
I use gas grill. And what I really want to experiment now with is starting to do the smoking aspect.
So
a lot of people get into smoking, figure out what racks it goes on, and the time and temperature for the different kind of meats. And so hopefully this summer I can buy one of those, and that'll be what I'm going to start to work on that way and see how it goes.
Yeah, that'll be fun. You'll have to bring some in when you make it. So we all have just at least, and some of us have many of them, just like low-key things where we feel very strongly about something that is not a life or death thing. It's just, you know, one of our day-to-day opinions, but that we are just like, I feel so strongly about this, and you cannot convince me that it's not true. Sometimes it's food related. One of the examples I gave you was that socks shouldn't exist. And I'm not going to lie, I'm not a big fan of socks. So that's where I came up with that from. I like shoes, but socks are irritating. Do you feel like you have any opinions like that you're just like, I feel very strongly like this. You're not going to change my mind about it.
Everybody needs a little OCD in their life. You know, I've had that for a long time. It's not as prevalent anymore.
Okay.
A couple kids later here, and if my shoes are out of place or something isn't where I put it, you know, I'm all right. But
Once you have kids, you have to get used to losing things.
Yes, but like messiness is my pet peeve. You know,
there
should probably be a little structure. You know.
Okay. And
so that's probably the biggest thing. Do I go around and advertise it? No, but people can see that, you know, if you looked at my closet goes short sleeve shirts, long sleeve shirts, dress shirts by the color of the rainbow. So Roy G. Biv.
Wow. Yeah, next level organization.
Right. Okay. And my boys used to think it's funny to come and change all the shirts around and run out the door and, hey, Daddy, moved your shirts. Or the pantry has a pasta shelf and a soup shelf. And
okay.
So I know, you know, it just makes it easier when you're trying to do the grocery list. You know, my wife Olivia will be there. And what do we need? And I can go right now. We need this many soups and this many boxes of pasta. I can go right down the line. And
wow.
But if you advocate that people look at you, you're weird. So
no, I think it makes perfect. I mean,
it's a low key approach is how your question was.
That's fair. Yeah. Just don't make a big thing about it. Don't talk about it till people think you're a little nuts. We live by the Dewey Decimal System here, so I totally understand that. I'm actually a little bit jealous of that level of organization. I wish that I had that level. I aspire to it. But I live in a house of chaos, so it's not really feasible most of the times. If I can see my living room carpet, I'm happy. Because the kids have way more stuff than they should at that age.
Although as long as the lines go exactly with the back.
And that's the important part. Yes. I am particular about that.
You need to switch it up on a week-to-week basis.
Oh, fun
fact. You don't want the carpet to be the same way every time.
That makes sense.
It gets dirty on one side, so you have to flip. Just like the lawn. Cut the lawn. Sometimes it's east to west. Sometimes it's north to south.
Okay.
Then you throw the diagonal in there once in a while.
All right. Good tip. You're welcome to throw in your, I don't want to say Michigan or Michigan State, because I can't remember which one you said.
Oh, that's not really low key, because I wear Michigan apparel all the time.
It's intense, yes.
Yes. And my wife's a state fan, so we're a house divided.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And we have a flag that we fly during Michigan State week. It's cut in half.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So she must have been really disappointed this year that.
I was happy. I'll leave it at that.
Yep. And it makes it more interesting that way, definitely.
But the Broncos did lose last week, so.
The Broncos have had a rough decade. Since Peyton Manning left, it has been a little touch and go there for a while. So my husband's been in kind of a bad mood about that for a while.
Yeah, the Lions had their way last week, so that was a good game.
Doing really good this season. It's been nice to see. I feel like that's a good note to finish up on. Thank you so much again for making time to sit down. I know that you've got a lot on your plate. So the fact that you took 45 minutes to come and sit down with me, I'm very appreciative of that. So thank you very much.
Well, Steph, thank you very much for the invitation. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. We'll see you next month at Mockham Township's meeting when you get to over what's going on here within the Flat River Library, and let our township members know all the things on here.
Absolutely. Collaboration is key.
You bet.
All right, thanks. The problem is, I think, when we sit down and talk, is we don't rein in our conversation for other people. We just let it go where it goes. And that's fun for us. I don't know how much fun it is for other people to listen to. So I apologize if this is like what is happening for some people. But so our podcast is obviously about Greenville. And so the beautiful perspective that Amanda brings to that is that she is a pretty much lifelong Greenvilleite. What, is there an official term for this? I asked Corey this too.
And do you say Greenvillian?
I think I said Greenvilleite and he just kind of went with
it. I'll do whatever. I'm not picky.
That's not helpful. That doesn't answer my question.
I thought it was Greenvillian.
Okay. If that's what you want
to be. Because it used to be Greens Village.
So people need to respond to this and tell us,
is it Greenvillian
or is it Greenvilleite? Person from Greenville.
Yes.
Let's say that. There was a stint where you were elsewhere, right?
Yes. I went to CMU for five. I was a super senior there. And then
I was a super duper senior. I was there for 6.5 years. I took a break in there, but still, yeah.
I even went most summers. Yeah, I still was a super senior.
Okay.
And then I was in Lansing.
I don't know why we're competing on this, but okay. So you and Corey were both in Lansing?
Not the same time.
Okay.
I was in Lansing, and then I came back here and toured the Daily News in Greenville. So.
Yeah, so they both have that in common as well.
Yeah,
you've kind of jumped around a little bit.
Just a touch.
Not necessarily like geographically, but like you've, the things that you've done with your time and your energies have changed.
It's,
so
it's been a little unhinged at times.
No, I wouldn't say, I think I feel like one of the things that's changed culturally that is a good thing is that people can feel like they don't have to pick a job when they're 19 mm-hmm. and then stay in that position for the next 40 years. If you have a life change, a life shift, like your goals or your values or just what you want from your life changes, then your job, your career can change with it. I think that's fantastic.
Like, I'm still like a reporter at heart. Like,
yeah. And you take those skills with you. You take that energy with you.
Like, I'm just like, ooh, like I like to know what's going on.
And you can write press releases now.
I can write really good ones.
So what came after the Daily News?
I worked, well, I still, not much anymore, but I wrote freelance for different publications. And then I became a mom, a stay-at-home mom. And then I slowly went back in the career field. I worked at a bookstore. And then I worked at like a couple other jobs. Like I worked at Have Mercy as the development director. And that's kind of how I got into this, the nonprofit world. Mm. So because I was
How long were you at Have Mercy?
I think 2 years. I was I was volunteering at the food bank, and then they were like hiring a development director kind of like with a grant through AmeriCorps, which is like kind of like domestic Peace Corps, but you're stationed here. And I just did that. So I was a federal employee for 2.5 years, which is.
Yeah. AmeriCorps is a cool program.
It's really cool.
Much like the Peace Corps, they work with a lot of different organizations mm-hmm. and a lot of different programs. And I have a friend who taught through AmeriCorps for a couple of years. It's one of those government-funded programs where, as with so many profit jobs and whatnot, you're not getting paid super well, but you're doing good things.
Doing good things, so. And they pay off your student loan if you have student loans.
There we go.
So my student loans were gone, which is really nice.
Yeah.
Because I think student loans are such a tether on so many people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like sometimes people can't do their dreams because they have to, like, worry about student loan, and that kind of stinks.
Yeah. I would imagine that both working at the Daily News and then working at Have Mercy, both of them gave you sort of a unique perspective on the community, like your viewpoint of it.
I feel like I know so much about I don't know what's happening in the homeless situation, like with different people now, but you're like,
I'm sorry. I can't help myself in the homeless situation and the bopping.
Okay.
Part.
Yeah. I don't know. Like the current, like I know like vaguely, but like I used to be like really in touch, like with, that community.
Right. And you can't not be. That's one thing. And I think there's, and I will say this as somebody who has not actually been immersed in this, so maybe it's a bit trite for me to say it, but I think there is a value to being immersed in that for a while to really truly grasp
it is
what people are experiencing.
It is like there's been so many times I used to do stories on them on the homeless people in our community, and like sometimes I'd be like, how is this person? No one should be surprised this person's homeless. Like, they're like, they've had such like struggles, like, I mean, domestic abuse, just so many horrible, 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 like, you know, there's substance abuse issues. There's so many horrible things that make a person homeless and, you know, like losing their job or getting kicked out of their, it just, it's a disaster and it is very sad. I remember I would get like really wound up when it would snow out because I'd be like, oh my goodness gracious, there's homeless people on the street. Right. It's a job that you're always thinking about it. It's always in the back of your head because you're just so worried about this population of people all the time. Right. Even if you, it's just, it's really hard. And like anyone who does it like full time for a long amount of time, I might, my hat's off to you because you have to be like a really strong person. And it's just. Yeah.
And it breaks down a lot of your basic function. So I think the reason why a lot of people have a hard time being empathetic towards people who are experiencing homelessness is because it's, first of all, it's scary. And it feels like something that, like, I've avoided it. It's not something I've experienced. And it's really easy to tell yourself, I've avoided it because I work hard. I'm responsible. I mean, so many of these people, it's not because they weren't working hard. It's like, especially if you are living paycheck to paycheck, one paycheck gone can really make the difference. And I mean, these people are working. Like, what if you get sick? Like,
yeah.
Or there's mental illnesses involved that, like,
yeah,
people
that's
have no
another
control
thing,
over.
The mental illnesses. And like,
which makes it that much more complicated because it affects your functioning as well. I wanted to draw attention to anyone who doesn't really feel like they've got a good grasp on what the experience is there or how going through something like that affects your decision making. There is something that the United Way of Montcalm, Ionia Counties is doing in the month of January, which is they're doing a poverty simulation program. They're doing it on January 31st and they're taking registration right now. They've got a whole program that they've put together in order to make people really understand how you have to make decisions when you're living in poverty. And this is not specifically exclusive to people in unhoused situations. It's people living specifically under the poverty line or living ALICE. So asset limited, income constrained.
What's the E?
Employed.
Oh, employed.
So it's basically the working poor, more or less. But people who are not necessarily under the poverty line. So if you have a chance to take part in this, it's a really useful exercise. It's on a Wednesday, January 31st, from 9:15 to 3:30. And, it's a free program they're doing. You can register on the United Way website. So definitely check it out if it's something you're interested in learning about.
It's definitely a problem in our community. I'm very passionate about this still. My husband was homeless for a while when he was a teen. He was a couch surfer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of it definitely shaped who he is today.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one thing, that's one aspect of it that we don't necessarily see either is how many kids and teenagers end up experiencing this. And I almost said fun fact because it's the opposite. It's a depressing fact is what it is. But homelessness does not just mean sleeping outdoors. It's not having a permanent residence. It could mean you're staying with random family members. It could mean that you are couch surfing. It could mean you're staying in a hotel. Basically anything. It could be living out of your car. Like there are a whole host of different ways that it could manifest, and it affects a huge percentage of youth. Sometimes it's as simple as, you know, a parent is in a transitional situation, or a parent has a significant other who doesn't get along well with a kid. Yeah. Like there are so many things that play into this. And at the very least, if you struggle feeling empathetic towards adults experiencing this, I hope that you can grasp that a child or a teenager in this situation has no control over it. They're not empowered to take care of themselves in quite the same way that we hope that adults are. There really are not any shelter situations that are open to under 18s. Even the shelters are only for adults. This is a depressing topic, but I feel like it's one of those things that
it's good to talk about because I feel like it's not a fun topic, but it's a topic that needs to be talked about. Not everything in life can be sister wives, right? And not everything can be reality TV. Sometimes we gotta
that might not be the best comparison.
Not everything.
Let's pick a different. Not everything in life can be.
Not everything in life can be
Christmas Day.
Can be Christmas Day and happiness and rainbows and
yeah
and peppermint bark which is really good.
Yes. Is that your favorite Christmas candy?
I don't know. I have so many. My friend got me this. Her sister makes these cookie boxes. And she got me these cookie boxes. And you know what I did? I sat on the couch because my husband. No, I showed some restraint. I ate a lot.
You ate 3/4 of it.
I ate a lot. And I was trying to like move the little wrappers around so you couldn't tell how much.
Clever.
It was so good. But I was all prepared for my thing. If anyone said, well, why is there hardly anything left in there? I was going to say, I was all prepared.
I feel like if somebody was actually making that inquiry, they would have noticed that the wrappers have been moved around.
The wrappers being well moved around.
But yeah, this is a good time of year to think about that, honestly, because when you're not necessarily to bring you down from that sort of happy cloud, but especially post-Christmas, as we reflect on all the positive things that we experience with our families and how lucky we are in so many ways, this is a good time to think about, try to put yourself in the position, like, what would Christmas be like for you if you weren't sure that you could afford to buy gifts for your family? If you weren't sure that you had enough to provide an actual like holiday meal, if you were living in a hotel, imagine, yeah.
Like a lot of my learners are definitely.
We haven't even talked about Mark yet. Can we acknowledge the fact that we have not gotten to Mark yet?
I'm the director of Mark.
Tell us what Mark is.
We are a nonprofit that helps adults learn to read.
Montcalm Area Reading Council.
Yes, thank you.
That is the organization that has the office in the building. So for anyone who is looking for anything adult literacy related.
Or ESL.
Or ESL. Well, I mean, that is a form of adult literacy as well.
That's true. But I
so
feel like
it's
that.
Adult English language as well as Spanish language. That's the primary other.
Yep.
Do we have any learners that speak a language other than English
it's
or Spanish?
All Spanish, right? Yeah, so like a lot of our basic literacy people, they're definitely living very much, very, very, very meagerly. Like $4 to them is a huge deal.
And what's really fantastic about the MARC program is that we all recognize that being literate, having strong reading skills, like there's no one is going to argue that that's not a valuable skill. We acknowledge it in our children. We want to make sure that our kids leave school able to read. But so often, once they reach a certain point, once they reach a certain age, the system kind of lets them fall through the cracks. And if they've reached that threshold and are not prepared, they're stuck. And the people who engage with Mark, who become learners through Mark, are people who are motivated to make changes in their lives, which is huge. And on top of that, the goal isn't, it's not a vanity goal. It's not, I want to read more in order to, you know, just have more reading leisure time, although that's nice too. Can you talk a little bit about some of the goals that?
Well, one, like to be able to read their bills, to be able to read their church bulletin. One thing I always like their prescription bottles, like holy smokes, that's like a big deal. To make grocery lists. A lot of them have career goals. Just it's such an important thing being literate. It's just amazing. Like, I remember, like, when you're in the hospital, you have like a million forms you're filling out. Mm-hmm. I simply cannot imagine not being able to read that. It's such a gift to be able to read. And we have a group of people who are coming to us and saying, I need help. And we're helping them. And all our services are free. I mean, that's like a wonderful thing. Like, it doesn't cost them a dime. The only thing they have to worry about is like transportation. You know, and this is just, it's such a wonderful program. And I just wish more people were always looking for volunteers and we're always looking for learners because we always can help more people. You know, that's our goal. So,
and before we dive too deep into Mark, I do want to do an actual dedicated interview with you that isn't like the ancillary one, so we can get into that a little bit more closely.
I'm always going to push it.
We'll talk to Amanda a little bit more at on some subsequent occasion when we get her in for like a regular interview. But I think a nice tying together of how you have put your energies as a human being into the world is that I think you summed it up very nicely that when somebody comes to you and says, I need help, the best human reaction, the best part of us should be able to bring to that, okay, what can I do to help you? I think we as human beings, if that can be our attitude, how much would that change? How much positivity could we bring to this community alone.
Oh my goodness.
By just trying to have that attitude when somebody specifically comes to you asking for help. Because let's acknowledge, it's hard to ask for help. Mm-hmm. It's really, really hard. And when somebody finds the bravery, finds the strength to come and ask for assistance, why don't we try to meet them in the middle and see what we can do? And I think we do have a lot of people in this area who make that their goal. And I think we're really lucky that way. So
we have a very tight community, I think.
Yeah, that's a fun place to end on. I think that's a nice post-Christmas place to land right around the Thanksgiving holiday. We think like consumers during that time because we're getting ready for the holidays. We're buying our gifts and whatnot. During that time, there's been a shift in like trying to think about how to give back in addition to giving to our family members as well. So I think this is a nice time of year to get into that frame of mind too. Once all of the holiday ephemera has been swept away, now let's try to think about the sort of permanent place that we are left with once we've thrown away all the wrapping paper.
Aww.
And all the stuff that's that temporary that just kind of gets that disappears after the holiday. What's a nice place that we can land after that? What's something positive and permanent we can create in our community? What's something we can do in the next week to try to offset that like post holiday letdown? So I'm going to make that goal for myself. And I'm going to charge everybody who's hopefully listening to do that as well. Find something that you can do that creates positivity in your community this week. Just one thing, just one little thing. Find somebody who needs help and help them out. It doesn't have to be anything big. Use the energy you have.
I like it.
Thank you, Amanda, aww, for overcoming, aww, your worries about sitting down. And for being part of our podcast.
Aww,
and I look forward to having you back again now that you've realized it's not as scary as it seems.
I did not pass away.
You didn't. You stayed breathing and conscious the whole time. I'm so proud of you. Okay. And thank you so much to our listeners. And I hope you have a happy new year.